Pastini is Eugene's new Italian bistro at Oakway Center, dedicated to serving up two of life's greatest pleasures, pasta and wine. Join them for classic favorites like spaghetti and meatballs, linguine with clams and sausage, and fettuccine alfredo paired with hand-selected Pacific Northwest and Italian wines. Pastini. Eat pasta. Drink wine.
Welcome to the Duck Pod. From the Register Guard newsroom, here's Ryan Thorburn and Austin Meek.
All right, we're back for another episode of the podcast, Duck Pod. Austin, we are getting knee-deep into no man's land as far as things going on around Oregon Ducks athletics. But, you know, there's always stuff going on, and we're going to, you know, continue this podcast on a weekly basis and come up with things. And there are some topics worth discussing this week. Why don't we start with the athletic director, Rob Mullins. His name has come up a couple times over the past few years, once at Auburn, now more recently Texas A&M. They have an opening. And obviously he's a logical candidate with what he's done here and his background. He's, you know, the chairman of the College Football Playoff Committee. He has an SEC background coming from Kentucky. Do you think there's anything to Texas A&M and Rob Mullins?
Well, the word that I heard today was that Rob Mullins was offered the job and turned it down, which neither of those things would surprise me. Would not be surprised if he was somebody that Texas A&M targeted for that job. Would not surprise me that he ultimately would decide to stay in Eugene. I know from our conversations with Rob in the past, he's made it pretty clear that that he likes it here, that he wants to raise his kids here. He's not really looking to leave Eugene. But I think as time goes on here, we'll see what happens with the Pac-12. But the trend certainly is the Pac-12 is falling further and further behind the SEC and the ACC and the Big Ten. So maybe it doesn't happen this year, but a couple years down the road, if there's an SEC job open and that revenue gap has gotten even bigger, it may be that Rob Mullins decides it's time to go.
Yeah, that's probably the only frustration he has out here is that revenue gap. And, you know, really Oregon isn't in as bad a position with that as far as that gap in terms of the Pac-12, the SEC, the Big Ten, as some other Pac-12 programs. But certainly it's a long-term issue that they're facing. You know, we've talked to Rob several times recently and about his new contract, and he seemed to be pretty content not only with, you know, what he's making, but that it ties through when his kids are done with school in Eugene. So it would be a mild surprise if he left, but, you know, never say never in this business. It's all about that ladder, and it's just a question of is Oregon the top for him? Or I could see him even maybe being a candidate to replace Larry Scott someday if he were interested in that. You know, a guy that's good with money, that knows the Pac-12, that's interested in playing catch-up in terms of the power conferences.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think there would be an appetite in the Pac-12 for somebody in that commissioner's chair who's got a little more of the background, sees things like the athletic directors see it, versus somebody like Larry Scott, who came in as more as a media executive running a college football conference. You know, the thing that I think would stick out to me, assuming that Rob Mullins is staying at Oregon, that says to me that he must feel pretty good about the direction of the football program with Mario Cristobal, because I think the biggest knock on Rob Mullins, honestly, is that under his watch, football has really kind of been all over the map. You know, they had the great season with Mark Helfrich. They gave Mark Helfrich a contract extension and then turned around and had to fire Mark Helfrich. They hire Willie Taggart. Willie Taggart, you know, creates some energy, some momentum around the program, and then bolts for Florida State. And now Mario Cristobal is in the job, had a solid first season, has done some good stuff on the recruiting trail. I think Rob Mullins probably knows that he's got a lot personally wrapped up in the success of Mario Cristobal, because as an AD, you know, you only get to hire so many football coaches. You've got to get that one right. Whatever else you do as an AD, you've got to get football right, or else it impacts your entire department. And I think if Rob Mullins, you know, had seen something from Mario Cristobal that was really concerning, if he was worried that that was going to go bad, maybe he would say, okay, it's time for me to look for another job. But if he sticks around, it probably says that he feels pretty good about the direction.
It's kind of funny just listening to you. What popped into my mind is Jimbo Fisher, in a lot of ways, started this whole mess for Rob Mullins. Yeah. When you think about the Rose Bowl, the peak moment, maybe in Oregon football history, Helfrich takes Jimbo down like he's never coached before, and Mariota outshines Winston, and Oregon's defense basically almost outscores Winston. So that run really leads to the big contract for Helfrich, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So that's one problem that Jimbo helped cause. And then another one is he leaves Florida State, and guess who they come to get is Willie Taggart. So that's funny that we were talking about Texas A&M and Mullins, because essentially Jimbo Fisher has a 10-year contract. He's essentially would be Rob Mullins' boss in a lot of ways, as you mentioned off mic. So I'm going to go ahead and strike Mullins from Texas A&M unless he's interested in joining forces with Jimbo instead of being tormented by
that. Jimbo's been knocking the dominoes over for Oregon. And before we came on, we were talking about this too, that that Texas A&M job and really, you know, the SEC culture in general, it's just different. You know, to be an AD in the SEC, it's not just about hiring coaches and balancing the books and doing all this kind of administrative work. It's a public office to be the AD at a school like Texas A&M. There's a lot of schmoozing that goes into that. A lot of shaking hands and slapping backs with people who made a lot of oil money in their careers. And I don't necessarily see Rob Mullins as the guy who works the room in that way. At Oregon, there's obviously tremendous resources and a group of boosters who have been incredibly supportive of the program here. It's just different. The scope of things at Texas A&M would be a whole different job.
And segueing to the point you were kind of making about the state of Oregon's football program, and it appears to be in good position and getting better, which is all about recruiting, obviously. And, a recent story we had this past week was the number one quarterback prospect in the 2020 class, DJ Uiagalelei. I'm not sure if that's 100% accurate, but I don't have
close
to,
enough.
I don't have to memorize it now.
anyway, better yet, you don't have to learn how to spell it.
Exactly. He has chosen Clemson, as expected, over Oregon, but Oregon was considered in that top two. He also included Mount Sac Junior College because he had family that went there. But does that say more about Clemson? And I don't necessarily see that as a loss for Oregon. You're mentioned with Clemson, who has the number one recruiting class. They're the national champions. They just blew out Alabama in the national championship game. I mean, they're not going anywhere. So the fact that Oregon's creeping up there, is it an indictment that they didn't get another West Coast quarterback, or is it more just about what Clemson's doing?
I think recruiting, so much of it is about the company that you keep. And when you've got a five-star, number one-ranked quarterback on your campus publicly choosing between your school and Clemson, it's never going to be a bad thing. Would Oregon have loved to sign him? Absolutely, of course. But I think the fact that you look at what was the school that he identified on the West Coast as the place that he was going to go if he didn't go to Clemson, it wasn't USC, it wasn't UCLA, it was Oregon. And I think that speaks to the fact that Mario Cristobal has really established Oregon now as the sort of the hot school on the West Coast. He's had some help with that from USC and UCLA for sure, because you look at what's going on with those two schools. Recruits don't want to go to USC right now. Why would you? That program's in turmoil. UCLA, you know, Chip Kelly's never been the guy who's out there, you know, just burning up the recruiting trail. It's never been his MO. Maybe he'll, you know, maybe he'll put UCLA back at the top with his type of players, and maybe they'll start to recruit at a higher level. But I don't know, a lot of coaches in the Pac-12 are just, you know, trembling with fear over losing recruits to Chip Kelly right now. So Oregon has really kind of stepped into this vacuum and taken advantage of the struggles of some of the Southern California schools. Would have loved to land this kid. Would have given you a really natural transition plan when Justin Herbert goes to the NFL. But I don't think you can say it's a bad thing that they were in the mix and ended up finishing in second place.
Yeah, so the 2020 quarterback story is a ways away. What we have in front of us now is to kill a couple months before the Justin Herbert Ducks hype begins in July at the Pac-12 Media Day event. First of all, do you anticipate that they will be picked to win the league?
If I were doing my ballot right now, I think Utah would be my preseason pick to win the league. I might have Oregon winning the North, but I'd have to wrestle with that a little bit. I'm not even sure I would say that, at least not right this minute.
I think I would probably go with Oregon because of the quarterback position, which in my view is just, it's the easy way out. That position weighs so heavily, and you have Justin Herbert, mm-hmm. whereas Washington has a great roster, but we don't know about Eason. We don't, you know, necessarily know about Washington State's quarterback ever until they announce who it is.
Yeah.
You know, and Stanford, you know, they have a solid quarterback, but I wouldn't compare him to Justin Herbert, KJ Costello. So mm-hmm. I'm probably going to have Oregon and, you know, maybe Utah in there. I don't know. I'd have to do more research on them. I know they're going to have a nasty defense again.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're going to be in the mix for that, and certainly they're going to be ranked in the preseason top 25. ESPN did a post-spring top 25, and they had Oregon number 10, which was the highest among Pac-12 schools. They had other notables: Washington 15, Utah 16, Stanford 17, Auburn 18, Washington State 19. So I guess they'll separate that out on the field, but very close there. Just your thoughts on Oregon kind of picking up some steam nationally in 2019.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Oregon is going to be a team that is a little more highly regarded nationally than maybe they are regionally going into the season, if that makes sense. Because I think national perception, so much of it is based on how many of their players do I recognize from last year? And I think nationally people are going to look at, first of all, obviously Justin Herbert. They're going to look at Troy Dye. And I think they're going to say, yeah, this, you know, this Oregon team is one, you know, with 10 starters coming back on offense, Penei Sewell, that basically entire offensive line. I think people are going to look at Oregon nationally and say that's a team that we're going to put in the top 10, top 15. I think within the Pac-12 footprint, I think you might find a little bit more caution about Oregon. Just because, you know, you look a little more deeply at the roster and you say they've got question marks at wide receiver. They've got some question marks on defense with the new scheme. You know, I think if I were doing it right now, somewhere in that 15 to 20 range is probably where I'd put Oregon rather than top 10 right now. But, you know, you're kind of splitting hairs at that point, and at this time of the year, it's all a guess anyway.
Well, it is kind of a guess, but when you look at the top 10, Clemson, Alabama, obviously 1-2, followed by Georgia, SEC, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Big Ten, Notre Dame, Michigan, Big Ten, Florida, SEC, LSU, SEC, is it really cyclical with the Pac-12, or are they at the point where and Oregon will have a shot at the playoff, but really the parity, that 15 through 19 grouping, is going to, you know, there's going to be losses there, and the Pac-12 is going to kill its own every year. What do you see with the disparity in revenue and just, I guess, the... It's a good thing and a bad thing, the parity in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I was on Sirius Radio earlier this week with Mike Yam from the Pac-12 Network, and we were talking about that, you know, especially in the Pac-12 North. The good and the bad of the Pac-12 North is that really you've got five teams in the North, if you want to throw Cal in there, that are fairly close to the same level. You know, Washington has been the team that has separated itself over the last few years, but not by an overwhelming margin. And I think we all expect Washington may come back to the pack a little bit this year. So, you know, you've got a division with really everybody outside of Oregon State is not too far apart. And that's a hard way to put a team in the college football playoff. You would probably rather, from a conference-wide perspective, have a division where there's one clear-cut dominant team that's a step above everybody else, and then maybe you've got two or three teams who are pretty good but not great, and then maybe you've got a couple teams at the bottom who you can write down as a likely win. That, to me, that's a better formula to have somebody go through the season either undefeated or with one loss, rather than a division where everybody's pretty evenly matched and every single game is going to be a war. So much of it for Oregon this year is going to come down to that opener against Auburn. You win that game, all of a sudden you're on the fast track as a team that people are going to be talking about as a potential playoff contender. You lose that game, you're in the position Washington was in last year, where you've got no margin for error. You can still have a great season, but it's really going to be an uphill climb for Oregon if they lose that Auburn game.
Yeah, the other issue that stands out is the teams that weren't in this ranking. USC, obviously not in there. Clay Helton on the hot seat. And Chip Kelly, only year two, but doesn't seem like he's gaining a lot of traction at UCLA. Those two schools really need to pick it up to get the Pac-12 back on track. So we're running out of events, Oregon Ducks-related events to cover for this academic year, albeit the final softball home series this weekend. Steve Mims will be at baseball. Obviously, Hayward Field has been torn down, so there's not going to be a lot of track to cover in terms of in-state. What are you kind of looking forward to besides vacation over the next couple months until we crank this football up again?
Well, you know, there's a little business to finish up during the sports year. Baseball, there's going to be a question of what happens with George Horton. He's in the last guaranteed year of his contract. There's an option year for next season. It's going to be, I think, interesting to see what happens with the Ducks over these last few weekends of the season. They've been in a real funk. I think they need to be competitive in these last few series, starting this weekend against the Beavers. If they can do that, maybe there is a window there for George Horton to be able to come back for that final year of his contract. Other than that, you know, media days will be here before we know it. But we got a little bit of time before we have to think about that.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in this week, and I promise we will figure out something compelling for next week.
Bold promise.
And we'll see you then. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Duck Pod. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts.